Our Lenten journey today brings us face to face with some of God's craziness. That craziness is best summed up in the line which occurs right in the middle of the parable. While he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was moved with compassion. He ran to the boy, clasped him in his arms, and kissed him tenderly. The father in this parable is compassionate, crazily compassionate, overwhelmingly compassionate. And this compassionate father faces us with a number of difficulties, because quite frankly, if I place myself in this parable and within the context of what is being told here, I usually end up sympathizing a lot more with the elder son than with anybody else in this parable. The younger son is just too woolly and loose-headed for me. The father is crazy with compassion. He should at least have some justice there. And the servants are just standing around being surprised all the time. The older son is where I fit. Wanting justice, wanting things to be done right, wanting people to bear the consequences of their deeds. But that's not the way that God works and functions. And the Father is being presented here to us as an image of God, as an image of the way that God relates to us. And there are all sorts of other levels to this parable from Luke 15. And I see with joy that the compilers of our lectionary, in giving us Micah 7 as our first reading today, they tap into one of the great clues of what's going on here in this parable. Our reading from Micah opens with the wonderful phrase, "With shepherd's crook, O Lord, lead your people to pasture, the flock that is your heritage, living confined in a forest, with meadow land all around it." It is the image of the shepherd which is central to what the Father is doing in the parable, and which comes as an answer to the criticism which the prophet Ezekiel had to speak to the shepherds of Israel. If we turn to Ezekiel chapter 34, we find there that tremendous and deep criticism against the shepherds of Israel. And God says to the prophet, prophesy, son of man, to the shepherds of Israel. And he accuses them of fleecing the flock, of slaughtering the flock to eat them and to live off their fat. And then God, in this negative way, describes the job of a shepherd within the criticism. "You have not, shepherds of Israel, you have not strengthened the weak, healed the sick, bound up the wounded, sought out the lost, and brought back the strayed. This you did not do." And later on, the prophet would give this ringing promise, "I myself will shepherd my people Israel." So we see in Luke chapter 15, one of the aspects of the compassionate shepherd, the shepherd who is to strengthen the weak, to heal the sick, to bind up the wounded, to seek out the lost, and to bring back the strayed. And these jobs, well, they're so contrary to my sense of justice. Because really, the wounded, I would like to tell them that they deserve to be wounded. The weak, I would rather look down upon. The sick, I would rather marginalize. And the lost and the strayed, well, I'd rather just tell them to keep lost because they're out there because of their own fault anyway. No, the compassion of God, the compassion of Christ, is something which brings the shepherd in our midst. God as shepherd, being compassionate, seeking out the lost and bringing back the strayed. And the seeking out of the lost and the bringing back of the strayed, is that not really what our Lenten journey is supposed to strengthen and to encourage in us? To encourage in us the patience of the Father who sits there and waits. For here in this parable, seeking out the lost and bringing back the strayed is a matter of waiting. Waiting in faithful patience, waiting in loving patience, for that moment when they will come to us, when they will return to us and seek us out. And the Father too, in his compassion, he might be crazy, but he is not stupid. The compassion is crazy, but it's not stupid. Because I see in the younger son this disturbing quality that, in fact, he has not come to conversion. If we look in the parable, there is the son sitting amongst the pigs, desiring to eat even their pods, and he comes to his senses. He doesn't come to conversion. He comes to his senses and said, "How many of my father's paid servants have more food than they want? And here I am dying of hunger. I will leave this place and go to my father and say, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I no longer deserve to be called your son. Treat me as one of your paid servants.'" In this interior dialogue, we see only one thing standing out. They have more food than they want, and here I am dying of hunger. It's self-interest which brings the younger son to his senses. It's self-interest which motivates him to stand up and to go to the Father. And in this interior dialogue of the younger son, we see all the manipulation. He's going to try and twist the old man's arm. He is going to try and play on the old man's sympathies. But what happens when he does reach the Father? When he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was moved with compassion. He ran to the boy, clasped him in his arms, and kissed him tenderly. Then his son said, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I no longer deserve to be called your son." But the father said to his servants, "Quick, bring out the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet." The father pays no attention to the manipulation. And here is the clue for us. Pay no attention to the manipulation, but rather respond with this trust, with this compassion, this craziness, which brings the lost and the strayed right back into community, right back into the heart of the household. In fact, insanely so, because the father says, "Put a ring on his finger." And within the cultural reference of that time, that just means giving him an open checkbook, which is rather silly of the father, seeing what the son has just done. But that's compassion. Compassion also challenges us to be restored to responsibility, to be restored to the household in a full way. And then the older son is as manipulative. The two boys are equally manipulative. When he hears that the fatted calf has been slaughtered, he stands outside. He refuses to go in. And his father comes out. You see how often the father is moving towards these sons as soon as they are close enough. And his father came out to plead with him, but he answered his father, "Look, all these years I have slaved for you and never once disobeyed your orders. Yet you never offered me as much as a kid for me to celebrate with my friends. But this son of yours, when he comes back after swallowing up your property, he and his women, you kill the calf we had been fattening." We notice two things in the older son. He's got an interpretation. The younger son has spent all his money on women. I think it's something that the older son desires. He is jealous of the younger son. But the parable tells us all that the younger son did was squandered his money on a life of debauchery. Jesus, in telling this parable, allows all his hearers to play the role of the older son. But women are not really mentioned, just debauchery. And the father responds to this manipulation of the older son with, "My son, you are with me always, and all I have is yours. But it was only right that we should celebrate and rejoice, because your brother here was dead and has come to life. He was lost and is found." Notice how the father refuses to play into the manipulation of the older son, who says, "This son of yours, The older son denies the relationship with the younger son. But the father, ever wise in his craziness, restores that relationship and he says, "Because your brother here was dead and has come to life. He was lost and is found." Now this parable teaches us how we can restore the dead to life, how we can seek out the lost and bring back the strayed. That is with this patient, expectant waiting for the moment when they cross our path because of the troubles of their life. And we have to be there with the wisdom and the compassion of the Father. And this parable spells out exactly not to eat up their manipulation, hand back responsibility, and always, always welcome and affirm. Always, always show the lost and the strayed that they are at home. Often institutionally we don't get that right. We tell the lost and the strayed that they deserve to be there. We place all sorts of penalties on them and think that this is the encouragement for them to rejoin with us. No, it is the waiting in patience and the being compassionate